Now. Sports talk. While you're on the clock, this is Zulak and Bertrand.
We're sports show radio hosts.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Hey, Beetle. I left on Wednesday.
Yes, you did.
And we were talking about the Patriots.
News kind of hit.
And a bunch of departures.
Yeah. You were having a departure later that evening, but yet four guys left for big money, and I don't blame them, and I would have never matched not a single of them. Not one of them.
And since I left, there's been additions.
Yes.
New guys.
Yeah.
Why don't we go with the most recent and work our way backwards? How does that sound?
Sounds good to me.
Cordarrelle Patterson to the Patriots.
It's pretty good. Pretty good returner.
So the Patriots get Patterson and a sixth-round pick from Oakland in exchange for a fifth-round pick. So they drop back around. They pick up Patterson in the process.
This kid was in Minnesota.
And now they added him. Yes, yeah, Minnesota.
I remember him. Yeah,
that's where he started. That's where he was drafted. The Patriots traded back in that draft. Could have had Patterson in the draft. They did not want him at the time. They traded back. Minnesota drafted him. The Patriots did not. And then he went to Oakland last year, and now he's being traded by Oakland to the Patriots.
Yeah.
For what they value is moving up one round from the sixth round to the fifth round. That's not a big asking price.
No, but you get a kick. You get a kickoff returner. A kickoff returner. Not a punt returner. A kickoff returner. And a fifth or sixth receiver that you can put in there and throw the ball deep to. Notice I said fifth or sixth because I don't see him as a primary top three receiver.
No, I think anything you get from him on offense is a bonus.
You want to throw it to him or you want to throw it to Slater deep in Denver?
You'd rather throw it to Patterson.
Yeah, I'd take my chances with 84.
Patterson has more skills at receiver than Matthew Slater does. But
God, this Slater thing is gone. We'll get to that. Go ahead.
I mean, you want to know why they have this guy? I'll tell you, the number one reason they have the guy is for the kick returns. Deion Lewis was the guy returning kicks for the Patriots last year.
Yeah.
He's not here anymore. So they went out and got a guy who has been an all-pro. They hand out all-pro for this. All-pro kick returner.
They got better in the kickoff return game.
He is one of the best in the NFL.
Yeah.
One of the best.
Gives you a chance to have the ball to 35 if you want to short kick it. That's pretty good.
He has been the top guy in kick returns 3 out of the last 5 years in the NFL. He's been the best in the league 3 of the last 5 years.
Yeah, he averages 30 a return.
And if you're just ranking it, ranking who's the best, you could make the case that he is the best kick returner in the league. Electric.
Yeah.
Fast. Speed.
Now it's somebody you got to spend time worrying about.
I think that's the thing. That's the number one thing he brings to the table.
Yeah.
His ability to return kicks. Now a lot of people say, oh, but what about everything's a touchback? No.
Too bad he didn't have him in the Super Bowl after he scored. After Philly scored 15 touchdowns, he could have had 15 returns.
I got to say, Zoe, I saw a lot of stupidity on the Twitters last night. On the Twitterverse, a lot of dumb comments being made out there last night about this one.
Is there people who think they're bringing him in as a receiver?
I don't know what people were thinking. I'm not sure what their thinking was, but I saw a lot of stupidity and reasoning about why the Patriots would have acquired this player. I can tell you, number one, that's the biggest asset and skill he brings to the team. The Patriots returned 28 kicks last year. 23 of them were by Deion Lewis. So here you go. You replaced him with a guy who was the best. Let's just call him the best in the league.
Yeah.
Best in the league at returning kicks. That's the biggest skill he brings. Second one is probably what he can provide for you offensively as a depth piece, as a depth receiver, not as a guy you're going to plug in and move on from Brandon Cooks from. I saw that from a number of tweets. Stop it. Nope, they're not getting Patterson to replace Cooks. Sorry, that's not what they're doing. And if they are, wow, that would be dumb. That would be really dumb, and I don't believe that's what's happening.
Yeah, I'd say trade the quarterback then.
Yeah, trade everybody.
Yep.
So Patterson is here, number one. But the other special teams thing that he has is the ability to be a gunner. He has done it on punt team. He obviously could do more of it and do it on, you know, kickoffs too, but Matthew Slater visited the Steelers on Saturday. Patterson's a pretty fast guy. Mm-hmm. He sort of embraced, because he needed to embrace, the gunner role on punt team last year in Oakland. Wow. But once he learned to like it, he was pretty damn good. So I don't know that it's necessarily draw the line A to B, as in Patterson's here, that means Slater is out. But it provides you at least somebody who can help you in that regard if Slater does leave.
Pittsburgh's got a pretty good eye on your special teamers. They always have, you know, even going back to Sean Morey days. You know, he ends up going to Pittsburgh playing there. See, Slater's in his early 30s, 33, I think. He's been often injured as of late. He gives you great leadership. I'm not refuting that. But this is that bill, better to be a year early than a year too late. You know, with that. And I think if Bill understands that this market is what this market is now with the money that's out there, Pittsburgh's probably going to make him a nice offer that you're probably not going to bring him back. I'm not going to freak out if they lose Slater, like some people are. I'd freak out more about Danny Amendola. You know, or your backside tackle. And I'll tell you what, the other two guys in LeAdrian Waddle and Cam Fleming who are visiting Dallas, offer them contracts down there, please. Offer them a lot. Take them. What's Dallas doing? What are they doing to try to acquire depth there? They got a big line. Dallas is fine in the offensive line. I just think they're looking for a swing guy as a backup. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not shocked by Slater. People are like, oh, my God, he's visiting Pittsburgh. Yeah, Dante Hightower did, too, and then came back here. Pittsburgh hasn't done anything yet in the offseason. So what did they have Slater in? And they're probably going to offer him a decent contract, and he may sign there. At least he'll play on a decent team to finish his career out. Matthew Slater's a good player. I'm not going to freak out like you're going to lose this massive leadership. You know? If everybody else is going haywire, what are you worrying about leadership in your locker room, right? Although the big guys are unhappy. I thought Slater's supposed to fix all that. You know? He's one of them, one of the captains. I like Matt Slater. Love Matt Slater. But man, at this age, don't be freaking out because he's going to visit teams. He's earned that right.
Okay, but the part you just said is complete nonsense.
It's a joke.
Because Matthew Slater was there and there are still issues that it doesn't matter to have the good leadership? Come on, you don't believe that.
Of course it does. No, you got Hightower coming back. Hightower's one of your captains. He'll help clean up that defense. You still have McCourty.
I would say that the reason why you're able to still go to the Super Bowl, despite all the bull crap that was going on, is because you had good guys in the room.
Yeah.
Who could put it aside and could go out and play every weekend.
And it's part of, you know, the offseason and that. And he's a great guy to have in that locker room and weight room sessions and sprinting sessions, OTAs. You need guys that are vocal, that are veterans to help get young guys through the doldrums of it. And the offseason's the doldrums.
I've always said this, and I believe it. The Patriots have the same problems that every other team has internally with players and nonsense and fights and bickering back and forth. They have the same issues that every other NFL team has.
We think you have 53 robots?
And what have I said? Always. The difference is...
they hide it.
They bury it. You don't find out about it. And they've got decent enough guys that they figure a way to work it out. Other teams don't. So when you start all of a sudden having a mass exodus of guys like Nate Solder or Matthew Slater... yeah, I'd start to, and again, Slater's not gone yet, and I'm not convinced he is gone because of the Patterson move, but there could be something lost in all of this, beyond just what the guys do on the field. Don't discount that.
Nope.
Don't wipe
that
out.
Great leader.
Because the Patriots are clearly set, by the way, on going after some former first-round draft picks and high draft picks, and Patterson kind of plays into that. We'll get to some of the other guys that they're bringing in here that we learned about over the weekend. 617-779-0985. Your thoughts on the Patriots offseason as it continues now with the additions part instead of the subtractions as we get into the week here on Zolak and Bertrand.
Making your job suck just a little bit less.
You think they have a big hole?
I think they have a big hole.
Zolak and Bertrand, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Dalton under center, takes the football, hands it off.
Nice!
Jeremy Hill fighting
nice!
For the end zone. Touchdown! Yeah! Bengals! Yeah! A 4-yard run for Jeremy Hill.
Andy Dalton's under center. Long count. Takes the snap. Turns left. Hands it off. Jeremy Hill. He's got
come
running
on,
room.
Jeremy.
Right side.
Come on, Jeremy.
He's off to the races.
Right, baby,
there
go.
He goes.
Go, Jeremy.
To the 40. Down
yeah!
the sideline to the 30. 20. 10. Touchdown.
Yeah.
Jeremy Hill. 74 yards. We'll be right back.
One of the additions this weekend, Jeremy Hill, former Bengals running back, former second-round pick back in the 2014 draft.
First touchdown, I'm going to do what Lapham did, just as an ode to Dave Lapham on the Cincinnati broadcast.
Now, why would you do that?
Yeah!
Right side.
Come on, Jeremy! Come on!
Baby, there he goes!
Go, Jeremy! Go! Get going! Step on Bob more than usual.
Why would you do that?
I remember this kid when he was at LSU, watching him on away games. You know, that's the only one on CBS nights. And then he was featured pretty thoroughly in the Hard Knocks documentary. Remember they did Cincinnati the one year? And that was like his, he broke upon the scene, like, got to find a way to get the ball to Jeremy more. This guy's dynamic. Dynamic for a big guy. This guy runs hard. He was like Fournette mini. Between the tackle, sort of the thumper, sort of what you wanted Gillislee to be.
He's coming off ankle surgery, put on IR back in November. So last year he only finished with 37 carries for a 116 and a fumble. Now, you want to go back to his LSU days, so be my guest, but he has played 4 seasons in the NFL.
Yeah.
And Cincinnati was ready to move on from him. That part of it, to me, aggravates me, that he's a Cincinnati Bengal. That they've acquired a Bengal.
He picked up a defensive tackle from Cleveland.
They've acquired guys from bad teams.
It's amazing they have this open relationship at Cleveland to trade, but the Garoppolo thing was never in play. But we'll trade you other players, and we'll give you Jamie Collins. And
it's a running
we'll
back,
go back and forth. It's a running back.
I know.
I mean, it's not like they're picking up Vontaze Burfict here. You know?
It's just a thing. Like Corey Dillon, you could understand. Like he had worn out his welcome in Cincinnati. Rex Burkhead is in the same category, though, as this one. Like, yeah, a guy that the bad team didn't even want to bring back. So you've got a guy that the bad teams in the league don't even want anymore. All right, whatever. Dime a dozen running back. I guess the upside is there. There's nothing about the Jeremy Hill acquisition that excites me, though.
Low risk.
Yeah, low risk. I mean, what's the risk in
Typical Patriot signing.
Yeah, really? Fine. There's that one. How about Jason McCourty being acquired?
I think that's a good pickup.
And why do you believe that?
Because there was interest in him before. Then he ends up going to, where did he end up going? Cleveland after Tennessee. But there was deep interest in there before, but the money was too high. And, you know, he's kind of that lengthy corner to go opposite Gilmore. He's got good size, good length. And he's pretty good at man-to-man. Likes to play man-to-man. If that's what you're going to have to play with Gilmore, and that's Gilmore's upside, then you need a man guy on the other side. And without Malcolm being there, I'd rather have this guy than Eric Rowe or Cyrus Jones or Jonathan Jones. You're going to allow one of those guys to kick in and be your predominant nickel guy. It might not work out, but I like the signing because I went back and looked at the numbers. His numbers are comparable to Malcolm's, even better in some spots as far as passes defended, games played. He's a veteran, so he knows calls. He's going to understand things. Smart kid. You know, he and his brother played together before, so you kind of got all that working for you. So it's the whole, you know, let's build the secondary like Rutgers and then bring in Gilmore, and then he'll be the other guy.
The power of telepathy.
Considering, I like the signing considering what they had there as far as depth.
I believe in that.
You know what I mean?
I believe in the brother part of it.
A sensory. It's a sensory thing.
Well, I don't think so.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, I just think it's knowing each other's tendencies.
It's a little deeper than that, man. At ESP.
No, I don't think that's what it is. I think it's like brothers playing on a line together in hockey. Yeah. Like you know exactly what the other one's tendencies are.
Like the Sedins.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's better in hockey because a lot of times the guys have played a lot together.
Hello, I'm Douglas Sedin. I am Rafael Sedin. You weren't here last week at the end, and we said, how quickly do they start messing with Gronk? When and if Gronk comes back? Like you have. Have Jason go in with Devin's jersey on. Hey, what's up, Rob? Hey, what's up, Devin? What's going on, man? Freaking twins. Because they're close. They're really close. You can see distinct differences, though. Devin's head's a little more shiny. Puts more cream on his head. Keeps a tighter shave. It's like Louth.
Okay, they acquired McCourty. He may have been cut in Cleveland. Should they have given something up to get him?
Yeah,
I don't
make
hate,
sure you get it.
I don't hate them for this.
Yeah, if that's the guy you want, and in case somebody else swoops in or gives him more money, let's go get the guy.
Because someone's got to tell me why was Cleveland going to cut him? He had a good year.
Because Cleveland,
Yeah, but so why? Why would you cut that guy? I don't understand that part of it. I know that that was part of this story, that Cleveland was talking about cutting him. Why? Will someone answer that question for me? Somebody in Cleveland, why were the Browns considering cutting Jason McCourty?
It's crazy. You had Joe Hayden.
Veteran guy.
You know, you've had good guys. You obviously had guys that could play there.
If he's anything like his brother, and I'm going to assume he is a little bit, so he's got to be somewhat like his brother.
Work ethic's got to be there, right?
Sixth round draft pick. You've got to be someone who's good for the room. I'd have a hard time believing that Jason McCourty is a guy that is not good for your locker room. I'm assuming he is. And he's a good veteran type of player who had a good year. Why in the world were they trying to cut him? They had told him last year in training camp that he wasn't a lock to be on the roster. They had offered him an out. They had offered him the opportunity to get cut last September, right before the season started. And so he made the roster, and he played well and had a good year, and now they were going to cut. Why? I don't understand that part of it. So if you're going to give up something small to get him, I have no issue with it whatsoever. Yeah, that part of it doesn't bother me.
It's not like you're giving up a third or fourth.
Exactly. No,
but it's even more than that, though. The reason that they're trading for guys this year instead of signing guys is because they lost so many free agents. The compensatory picks they get next year, it's worth it to swap down 10 or 12 spots in the draft to acquire
14,
a guy,
I believe it's
so it doesn't affect into the compensatory formula for next year.
I think
they might get
14?
Four compensatory picks next year.
Yeah, when you're good, you all the guys they've gotten from the first four that departed. Yeah,
yeah, but it also means
Danny Shelton. Same with Cordarrelle Patterson.
But it goes beyond that. In the near term, it's better to get Jason McCourty with what's left on his 2-year deal out of Cleveland than it is to sign into a brand new deal for multiple years.
That's true, but I do think they're trying to restock in the draft because their drafts have been so down lately.
They could get
2/3 and 2/6 next year for the four guys they lost.
Okay, that's fine and good, but that shouldn't get in the way of them going out and getting somebody who can help their team in free agency if the guy is there. If that's part of the equation for this offseason, that sucks. They're worried about what their draft picks are from compensatory picks for next season.
Not if it's guys they want to sign anyways.
Yuck. Yeah, but again, that shouldn't get in the way. Like, that shouldn't really be a lot. There shouldn't be a lot of consideration given to that this offseason. That would annoy me if that's true. I doubt it is. That would be really annoying. We're worried about what our compensatory picks are next. If we're going to get guys, it's got to be low level, low risk, low level free agents.
About this, too. I mean, Devin's one of your captains. He's one of your leaders, one of your more vocal guys, right? Sort of the guy they put out to the front, you know, when it's time to speak. What's this do as a locker room thing, too? Not that you're taking care of Devin, but you got your brother in there now. It's a little more of an enjoyable environment. Everybody's been talking about how miserable it is there. Well, we're signing some talented guys. We're bringing in talented guys. We've lost guys, but we're taking some risks on some guys that have been high picks before. Maybe didn't work out there, to your point. The Clevelands, the Cincinnati's, you know, the crappy team types, and Raiders. We're bringing in guys to give them a chance. So what's that do for future free agents? I don't know.
You know, we've talked...
Just something to throw into it.
We've talked about McCourty after the Super Bowl and his willingness to talk about Butler being benched.
Yeah, Brady did.
And Brady what?
Well, Brady commented on Malcolm. You know, like
I'm
Malcolm.
Talking specifically about Devin McCourty. We've talked about McCourty specifically. You did the interview after the fact. He spoke to a couple different radio shows in the course of 1 week.
Yeah, he did that sickle
cell. We spent time specifically on him, and we said that it felt like he was one of the guys who had been lost. Like, oh, wow, Bill's even lost Devin McCourty.
Let down.
Look
right.
at Devin McCourty out here. Devin McCourty's not afraid to talk about the situation. I wondered if there was a small part of this acquisition that was to get Devin McCourty back on board.
Is it good for the room?
With the coaching staff.
Because you know who, the second that it was rumored that Jason McCourty was going to be released, they share a Twitter account, but DMAC went on our Twitter account with the Google eyes.
Ooh,
look at that news. And then bang, trade was pulled, and next thing you know, he's here. So he was ahead of the actual action of doing it. So is that a good slap on the butt to McCourty? Devin McCourty. It's going to be fun talking about him this year.
Patriots,
clear which McCourty.
I've also acquired pass rusher Adrian Claiborne is coming to New England. We'll talk about that coming up after these headlines.
Zulak and Bertrand on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Zoe and Bertrand.
Here on Zolak and Bertrand, 617-779-0985.
You like this song, McCone? A little Mississippi Queen?
Love it.
Makes you want to party? Huh? Electric?
Could get down with this, yeah.
Look at you smiling. You smile more during this show in 1 hour than you do the whole time you work here in other shows.
Harding Troop used to make me smile, yeah.
I'm sure that was my... during the breaks, huh? Seeing what you saw on computers. We'll leave it at that. Another day without Hardy. Just saying. Slide him down here. Hell to midday show. Let's get him off that. Yeah.
Adrian Claiborne, 2-year deal.
Good player.
Is that what it is? Do I have that right? I want to make sure I have that right.
Yeah, it is.
2 years, right? Yep. To the Patriots. Is this your home wrecker? Is this your guy?
No. But it's a guy that's actually got some sacks that you didn't have last year. What did he have, 9.5 sacks last year?
Yep.
6 of which came in one game.
I don't care.
That's worth an asterisk.
The Tully Bantha Kane stat.
Okay, that's worth... Listen, that's worth mentioning.
What did Bantha Kane get that 1 year? He had like 7 against the Bills in the combined games? Yeah. Tully Bantha Kane, double-digit sacks. Yeah, 7 game against Buffalo.
He got double-digit sacks, and he got a jersey hung on the hallway here at 98.5 The Sports Hub. 2 years, max value, $12.5 million. For Claiborne to come to the Patriots.
Who was a better 95? Tully Bantha Kane or Dwayne Saab?
I'm not valuing the 9.5 sacks. I'm valuing the fact that he's a good player.
He's the guy. He's one of the guys, multiple guys, that gave Nate Solder fits in the first three quarters against Atlanta in Super Bowl 51.
In my opinion, this is easily the best offseason acquisition so far.
I think it's better than Shelton. Because he's basically a run guy, run stuffer guy. This guy is actually a guy you could flex out. And give tackles problem. Bad tackles in this league.
This is it. This is the best guy so far.
Yeah.
Best acquisition on the Patriots.
Nobody thought he was coming here. People thought they were just he was just taking a visit just to tease people. And he ends up staying here. Like, ooh. Tells me they wanted him. They actually wanted him. Wasn't just kicking the tires, you know? Some guys they bring in just to kick tires. Yeah. Give Danny Woodhead a call, see if he's into it. Nah, he's not into it. He's retiring.
Pro Football Focus last year had Claiborne graded as the 19th best edge defender in the league. That's pretty good.
Means he's, ooh. Yeah, that puts him in the top 50% of the league. It's 32 teams. If he's top 19, I mean, yeah, cut that in half because there's two.
And that factors in everything.
Defense, right?
That factors in everything. Everything you do while on the field. Whereas they also have a ranking for pass rusher.
Yeah.
And he ranked 13th in the league.
The reason I like it is because it's Quinn and it's an upfield scheme, meaning they've used the Seattle mold to build their defense. You know, it's flex guys out. Let's get athletic guys like Michael Bennett, play five techniques. Let's get upfield. Let's run some games. Let's do some blitzing.
You have a legitimate player opposite Trey Flowers.
Right.
Two legit ends is what you have.
So there you go. So like already what you already have in the middle, you got Sheldon, you got Trey Flowers, you've got Malcolm Brown. I'm going to screw that up every time I do it. Malcolm Brown. Butler gave you some good depth. You got Rivers coming back off the knee. You got Dietrich Wise. And now you got this kid, Claiborne, the flex out on the other side. With Hightower, by the way, coming back in the middle. Your front's a little better. And you solidified the corner opposite Gilmore and signing McCourty. So have you taken care of some of your defensive issues? Because I think they're going to draft some young linebackers that can run. I think the other Flowers and... I think if you want to watch number 52, Landon Roberts. You want to see him take some horrific angles? Watch that Super Bowl again. Watch the LeGarrette Blount touchdown run.
I know you guys don't care about the draft much, but we talked about how there was no tackles in the draft this year, like left tackles especially.
Okay.
Apparently this is an oddball anomaly year that there are a lot of off-the-line linebackers in this year's draft that are really good. Which is what you need, right?
We talked about this when we watched the combine 2 weeks ago.
Yes, but I thought the Patriots don't like the draft for need.
Well,
what have they done this offseason? They filled needs and needs.
Yes.
Every guy's filled a specific need.
I would agree with that.
They're getting back to doing things, I think, their way, to where maybe we did too many of the Coney Ealy's for two or Brandon Cooks for one. We're going to use our draft pick. We're going to get back to drafting, guys. If we need to draft a running back
in
the second.
Picks.
Yes.
Your high round
Yeah,
picks.
1, 2, 3.
Make the draft great again.
Yes.
What's that?
What?
Make the draft great again.
Make the draft great again.
Like that. Make the Patriots draft great again.
Yeah. There you go.
Draft That's for need. Draft for some of the issues on your team. 617-779-0985. John in Newburyport. John.
Johnny.
What's going on, guys? Hello?
Hi.
Hey, John, go ahead.
You were talking earlier about McCourty.
Yes.
My memory, which is sometimes faulty, is that last year, Hugh Jackson kept saying, I need players. McCourty came out in a public forum answering questions to the press and says, we got players. Inferring, I always get that wrong, that it's the coaching. I think he was all done there as soon as he opened his mouth that way.
Is he right?
I think he's right, too.
Do you see the people they have across that defense? I mean, you already got Sheldon. You had Jamie Collins.
They get some offensive linemen out there, too. You know?
Yeah.
It's bizarre how bad. How a guy 1-31?
Sean Kizer was your quarterback. Okay? Coaching. Coaching is putting it in Kaiser's hands. Remember before the half? Like, there's that sneak from the two, and the clock ran out on them. They didn't even get 3 points. It's just stupid coaching.
So let me ask you a question, though. You know that the famous shirt out in Cleveland with all the names? Do you really believe none of those kids could play, or was it the organization? I mean, some of those kids must have come into the league with the ability to play the game.
I mean, think about it. Look at your coaches you've had. You had Mangini, Romeo Crennel, no offense, but I don't think he's a head guy. Was it Chris Palmer there, too? Palmer do time as a head coach there. He did. Ooh, that was the Tim Couch era, right?
He was the first guy when they returned to Cleveland.
Of the Parcells-Belichick tree. That's right.
No, he was the first guy that was the coach when they returned from from dead.
Wow. They've had bad quarterback play. Horrific quarterback play. Not bad. Horrific.
I think John is overplaying what McCourty said in Cleveland. Here's the quotes from when that happened. Which was end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
McCourty said, the talent in this locker room is not the talent to go win the Super Bowl this year, but the locker room is far more talented than 0-16.
Yeah.
I'm kind of tired of hearing so many people say, even within the organization, and that's the shot. So the only part that I think is...
acceptance of poor.
The only thing I think that's overplayed is he took a shot at everybody there, not just the head coach.
Well, but what was Hugh Jackson saying at the end of the season?
Yeah, I mean, he sucks.
I didn't hire an offensive coordinator because I didn't want to make him go through that, is what he said.
Yeah, you're accepting it.
Like, we knew we were terrible, so I didn't want to hire an offensive coordinator to have him get killed for all these moves.
Didn't he also sell it to see somebody else do what I do? Right?
I just don't think he was calling out, like, the coach for the lack of coaching in-game. He was just saying he was tired of all the bull crap there, which includes the coach. So maybe it's the opposite. It's even more of a shot. John's right. It's actually a bigger shot than I thought it was. He didn't call out Hugh. He called out everybody, saying we don't have the guys or we need more guys. Let's work with the guys we do have and find ways to win games. He says, I think it's probably bugged everyone in this locker room. When you're one of the guys on the team who's playing your heart out and putting everything into it, obviously we aren't getting the result we want, which is very apparent. But still, you're giving everything you have. You don't want to hear about what you don't have. You want to make the best of what you do have. I think that is just the bond that is built in this locker room of I want to win for Danny Shelton, now his teammate in New England. Danny wants to win for me. He mentioned some other guys as well. 617-779-0985. What's on your mind? Do you have something
Say the tight end is, say he holds out. Do we have a tight end to line up in OTAs, or is it really going to be Dwayne Allen? Like, do we have an answer to that?
Dwayne Allen is.
Are they addressing that?
Likely be here for OTAs.
We got to see Ebron making these visits too. And I don't look at him as a blocking tight end. I think he's more of a pass catching tight end. But do we have a plan ready to go in case 87 says, you know what, I'm good.
I don't know. We'll talk more about that coming up next hour. What was your favorite moment of the NCAA tournament this weekend?
Oh God, UMBC. Baby.
Okay, I want to get your thoughts on that. We'll talk about the tournament.
Retrievers.
Next.
I'm going to King Arthur, the Knights of the Round Table.
Could this head injury have been caused by a fall?
Zolak and Bertrand on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Absolute. Incredible performance. Shock and awe in college basketball. UMBC makes history in Charlotte.
You like UMBC, Zoe? You all about that?
I like the way the kids play.
You all
really
about that
do.
Life?
Great motor. Get that little kid trying to say, hey, on a good day, I'm 5'8". And you look like Mike Reese and you're 5'6" or lower. Nice little headband you have. How about the stories of them? We're so shocked we won the other night against Virginia that we couldn't even celebrate. We're all doing laundry, trying to wash our uniforms to get ready. It was like an AAU team. What's a coach standing there with a netted bag? Hey, guys, everybody put your uniforms in the bag. We're gonna wash these, clean up for you for the next day. I don't even know if they brought another color. What if they advance, right, McCone? You got to switch jerseys. You're the home team, you're the away team. You're always going to be the away team, right?
As a 16, you're always the lower seed.
Yeah, so just, guys, just bring the dark ones. Just bring the yellow, awful uniforms.
You didn't need two colors.
Retrievers. Right. Pretty cool, though. Boy, did Virginia look big and clunky. Like, where'd the ball go? I just can't chase that guy. You know, like when Rocky was chasing the chickens in the yard for the first time? That's the way Virginia looked. How does some of these teams that are so good lose two games all year? You throw them in a neutral environment against a team that's got a system they've never played before and they can't adapt. Like, that's coaching to me. Like, after a half, okay, you got us. We're going to make adjustments. I got pure Division I top-end talent. We just won the freaking ACC. We're 31-2. We're going to adapt. No, I'm just going to stand there with my arms crossed. Did you see the Virginia coach? And he just stood there with his arms crossed, staring. Never opened his mouth. Never opened his mouth. Looked like a guy who used to coach the Detroit Lions. What the hell's his name? Hardy's got the mustache.
Wayne
Caldwell?
Fonts?
Huh?
Wayne Fonts?
No, not Wayne Fonts. Was Jim Caldwell. Instead of Lovey Smith, just not say anything. Like, you're going to say something. You got to call timeout. You got to do something. I'm happy for those kids. Those kids played their ass off. That Lyles kid's good. That kid can ball. Like, I went to the University of Maryland. UMBC was like, it's the little sister satellite campus, you know? This would be like UMass Dartmouth beating
Kentucky. Tournament?
Seriously, it'd be like UMass Dartmouth
beating Kentucky. Great story. Can I tell you that I don't give a damn about UMBC right. even a little bit? I'm happy only because...
You lost money, didn't you?
No, I didn't. I didn't. I'm happy only because they beat what I think was the fraud number one seed in the tournament, and that's been proven.
Yeah.
In Virginia.
Yeah.
Fraud team.
I mean, everybody's...
And a lot of people were jumping on them and saying how, and I just like, I don't know how good they are.
I just love all the
great season. Fabulous season. Yeah. Defensively, very strong. And they got booted by UMBC. Like, that made me chuckle. That made me laugh. I enjoyed that part
close.
Of it. I enjoyed that part of it. And as soon as that game ended, you know what I thought? Oh, this is going to suck for the next game.
Yeah.
And it did. Did you see any of that game last night?
Watched the whole thing.
McCone, did you see any of UMBC last night?
Yeah.
Was that not one of the worst displays of basketball you've ever watched?
There was a lot of bad basketball yesterday.
It
was tough.
I couldn't stick with that game. I just checked in on it because it was terrible.
It was. They gave great effort because they're diving all over the court. And they only have really a rotation of six guys that they use. But
junk.
I mean, you can just tell, like, the guys down the bench, like, the crappy golf shirts that, like, the trainers wear.
It's just short-lived.
It's a low-budget operation.
It's short-lived. It's short-lived, though, because they weren't.
But they had their 2 days, man.
UMBC is not that good.
No, but they had their 2 days.
Like, let's get that out of the way. They had their moment in the spotlight, and now it's over.
Like, does that take away from Virginia's loss, though? Like, that should never happen. Okay? That should never happen.
It had never happened before.
I just laugh at the hoop heads that, like, everybody's bragging. Oh, I know what I'm doing. Look at this bracket. You all got smoked in every single freaking region. Nobody's bracket stood up. It's great.
I mean, they will be.
It's chaos. I love chaos.
They will be a great trivia question answer forever.
Yeah.
Because it's not likely to happen again anytime soon.
Because you say UMBC. Wait a minute. Is that UNC Charlotte?
The previous 135 16 seeds had lost. Okay. So once in 136 tries had this happen. And I hope that the next 135 number one seeds win because I can't stand to watch another crappy seed get into the second round and suck like they did last. Oh, what a, both teams in that game. Atrocious.
The best thing that I love about this is the outcome of it. Shaughnessy bitching from a hotel because he couldn't see the game. Yeah, I'm a hotel. Can't even see the game because it's on something called True TV. I'm like, what do you have, an antenna and a tube TV? He's like, no, I'm in a hotel nitwit. And then True TV starts chirping Shaughnessy. Like, you shouldn't be mad you can't find our channel. You should be mad about the hot takes that you had about the Boston Bruins. Your awful takes to start the season. You got people from True TV, their actual Twitter account, chirping Dan Shaughnessy now in a hotel room. Because he's bitching because he can't see the game. And you know what happened? Shaughnessy got fed some regular CBS game because that's the only channel he probably. What hotel is he in? By the way, where is he?
Oh, that, I would have. You know what? I'd agree with that. True TV's probably hard to find in a hotel.
Oh, yeah. Sure it is.
Yeah, probably damn near impossible.
I remember staying at the Intercontinental in Cleveland when the Red Sox were on, and we didn't have the MLB network.
You think Dan knows how to use the March Madness app?
Of course not. No. Dan can't turn his phone.
I was on that thing all weekend. It was great.
Here's my question for Dan. How many people were really seeking out the UMBC game even after they
had won?
You had to have been.
If you're getting fed the regular one and you see the score up there, that game was close the whole time.
The people who are interested in the NCAA tournament. That's not a huge number. Oh,
no,
of people.
No, no. I think the casual fan was
you're overrating it.
It's me.
That caught fire. The only reason Zoe watched the tournament.
I watched two games this weekend. It was the Virginia game in the second half because holy crap, this is going to be a game. And then I sat there all day Sunday after Tiger, waiting for that game at 7:45.
Zoe laughs at me all day Thursday and Friday about the NCAA tournament.
And I got
how excited I
Friday
was to
night,
watch it.
I got hooked, Jim.
And then Friday night, he's into it all of a sudden.
Yep, in got me. Just give me Cinderella, baby. Give me one. Give me Chaminade. Remember Chaminade beat Ralph Sampson of Virginia? McCone, you're over there laughing. Were you four? I think I was four then.
Yeah, McCone.
You weren't even born yet.
Missed that one.
You didn't know who Ralph Sampson is. God, those were the good days.
I can tell you that the thing that really annoyed me this weekend was Kansas allowing a Seton Hall three at the buzzer that meant absolutely nothing.
I saw your tweet. Absolutely
destroyed my Kansas minus 4.5, which really left me leaving Vegas a lot poorer than I would have left Vegas. That one was a problem, and that's not just me. That's a lot of people. So when that happened, and I had other tickets from the day that I needed to go cash in on, and I went to the window at Mirage, I was standing next to two guys, one who had just lost he had a $2,500 riding on that. His buddy next to him had $600 on it. So between the two of them, there was $3,100 that they had on Kansas to cover the 4.5.
Three.
Those guys didn't feel so hot. I left town that night. I went to the airport. I bumped into a guy at the airport who said, yeah, I got smoked on Kansas. Here's my best friend. His flight wasn't until tomorrow night, but losing on Kansas, he called the airline and said, you got to get me the hell out of town tonight. And he left town. That Kansas game was one of the biggest swings I've ever seen in the sports book in a weekend in Vegas and the opening round. That thing smoked a lot of people. Kansas won the game. They just happened to win by four because they let up that lousy three at the end. That one was a bad one. That one felt like a bloodbath in the books in Vegas.
I mean, UMBC had a chance to lose at the last second, too. They missed two free throws. Kansas State missed two free throws at the end. Now, the UMBC ended up throwing in a useless shot, and they lost by seven.
Yes.
But if it was nine, that would have affected – those two free throws would have affected a lot of people, too.
Like their Twitter
people
account –
people wouldn't normally have bet on UMBC, but they did because of the game Friday night.
The UMBC Twitter account was freaking hysterical after that game because, like, John Heyman was chirping him, like, who the hell are they? And they're like – how's our question? Who the hell are you? It's going back and forth. It was great. They were chirping Seth Davis. Seth Davis said, this one's over at tip.
Providence had a sneaky bad ending, too, if you were on that game at three. The three-point spread. They were down by six and decided, you know what? We're going to bring the walk-on in and throw it down low and hit a layup to make it four. And the final finish four instead of shooting a three, possibly. And getting it to within three and then falling again.
Yep.
They just decided to give up on the game. Get the walk on the layup before his career's over.
Mr. Cheer here for 2 days. He's fist pumping back air. Yeah, just fist pumping. Hardy and I were losing it. But everybody misses you at the scoreboard. We were there on Thursday.
I'm telling you, man, I lost a lot this weekend. Yeah. I lost a lot on like really close ones too. A lot of really close over unders that you just look at and you're like,
but the best thing was,
how did I just lost this by
you mean like what was the game Friday night that was 19 points were scored in the final minute and the game went over instead of under?
Yeah, I didn't have
I had that
one,
game too.
But I saw other people that did and they were losing their
19
minds.
Points scored in the final minute.
In the final minute of play.
Yep. The best one, too, was URI. And Thursday, when they tipped off, they have this rather large kid that plays on them. And I go, oh, my God, Jim, who's this heavy kid?
Oh, is it Barry?
He's got a T-shirt on underneath, a big baggy T-shirt. And Jim goes, you don't understand. He can't run. It's like he goes down and back, and they tap him out.
He's got good touch around the basket, but he can't run.
He clanked the first four shots off the rim.
Really? He's got a decent shot.
And then 2 days ago, Portnoy goes, who's the heavy kid from your eyes? Like, everybody's watching.
Matthew in Framingham, what do you got for us?
Hey, how you doing? I just want to say, Beetle, that killed me, too. I had it at five, but that one killed me. I couldn't believe that last-minute Seton Hall shot. And not just that, I bought into the whole Marshall thing. And, well, you know, that kid number 33 looking like Bird in the first round, and they get blown out. And then Xavier, they're blowing him out. They ended up losing by five. I look up, and they lost by five. I couldn't believe it. But anyways, I just want to say something about this tournament in general. I have never seen so many upsets in one tournament. I mean, of course, we had the 16 beating the 1, and that's crazy. But outside of that even, just I've never seen so many upsets in one tournament. This is the best tournament I've seen.
Yeah, it's been pretty wild. And I will say this. There's a lot of stupid bad basketball being played in this thing right
now.
So
bad.
I mean, so bad. I decided this weekend that the only way to make this enjoyable is to be betting on it.
Yeah.
That's basically that's the conclusion I arrived at. There have been years where you can watch and you could say, wow, this is a really well-coached team. This team actually has their crap together, which is not the norm in college hoops because the guys are so young. They're younger than ever. And a lot of times you get guys who can recruit, but they can't coach. This year, wow, has this thing sucked. But it's been a lot of fun if you had money on it.
Watch Syracuse win the whole damn thing.
By the way, I think
it's going to happen. Jim Boeheim at Syracuse.
Based on my again, just these anecdotal observations that I made out in Vegas over the weekend, I feel like the books have done very well this weekend.
Oh!
I feel like we all bought a room at a casino. Like, I own the room I stayed in this weekend, as do a number of other people. Like, they have, like, 1/20th of their room purchased as a down payment. I think the books did well. People were getting slaughtered.
You bet the chalk.
It was sort of ugly.
You didn't do well in this
thing. It was sort of ugly. There have been years where you could kind of get a sense that people are doing well. This year, I got a sense that people were doing really bad.
How's the matchup shaping up for Boston?
That may have just
weekend?
Been because I was doing really bad, but it felt like I had a lot of...
Not good.
Oh, Boston got crap teams.
Yeah.
They got chalk, pretty much chalk. It's Villanova against West Virginia and the great 2-3 game, Purdue against Texas Tech in Boston.
Ooh,
that's a good regional matchup.
Ooh, I don't think that's going to draw a lot of people to the building that otherwise are not interested in those games. I mean, they're all sold
tickets
out,
available,
of course, right?
No.
No, it's just the secondary market. We'll take a hit. That's what that comes down to.
Hmm.
I mean, Villanova will travel.
Villanova
will have a strong, strong presence
here. I was hoping Marshall would beat West Virginia because those fans might travel, those crazy Marshall, West Virginia people.
West Virginia probably travels pretty well.
They're there every year.
Oh, West Virginia travels.
It's like ho-hum for them.
You know what? West Virginia's got a guy who looks like he's 62 that plays on her team. I don't know her name, but he looks like Derek Fisher. Like, remember Derek Fisher was 52 and he's still playing for the Lakers or Kobe? This is what this kid looks like. Big-ass beard, little gray hair. Like, wow. He's on year 8. I wonder how they snuck him in.
Yeah.
Wasn't there a case, can I just interject this quickly before we get to the headlines? Wasn't there a case being made that Virginia was going to somehow have it hard in their bracket, Jim? That they had the tough draw? Here's who's left in that bracket.
Yeah, Villanova got the easiest draw.
Kansas State, Kentucky, Loyola, Chicago, and Nevada.
The top 4 seeds in that bracket are out.
Yeah, but I'd rather have that in Boston. How crazy would that be if that was in Boston? Those are the 4 teams in Boston. That'd be great.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I think Kentucky was underrated coming into this thing.
Oh, my God. Just got a tweet from Dan Roach. He is actually videoing himself entering the Magic Kingdom with his family.
All right, hang
I'm
tight.
I'm going to retweet it.
We've got headlines, 90 seconds, no commercials, and McCone has some NBA news.